Guardian Unlimited.
Wolf Brother by Michelle Paver is read by Ian McKellen and brought to you by audible.co.uk. Listen out for next week's instalment.
Chapter 13. "Don't move," breathed a voice in Torak's ear. "Don't make a sound, and don't touch the bones." Torak couldn't even see the bones. He couldn't see anything. He was huddled in rotten-smelling blackness with a knife pressed to his throat. He gritted his teeth to stop them chattering. Around him he sensed the chill weight of earth and the massed and mouldering bones of the raven dead. He prayed that all the souls would be far away on the death journey, but what if some had been left behind? He had to get out of here. In the first shock of being caught, he'd heard a scraping of stone as if his captor was sealing the mound. Now, as his eyes adjusted to the dark, he made out a faint edge of light. Whatever had been dragged across the entrance didn't seem to be a perfect fit. He was thinking about making a run for it when he heard voices outside, faint but coming closer. Torak tensed. So did his captor. The crunch and rustle drew nearer, then halted about 3 paces away. "He'd never dare come here," said a man's hushed, frightened voice. "He might," whispered a woman. "He's different. You saw the way he won against Horde. Who knows what he'd do?" Torak heard the squelch of Boss. His foot twitched, and in the darkness something clinked. He winced. "Shh," said the woman. "I heard something." Torak held his breath. His captor's knife pressed harder. "Ah!" A raven's cry echoed through the trees. "The Guardian doesn't want us here," muttered the woman. "We should go. You're right. The boy wouldn't dare." Sick with relief, Torak listened to them move away. After a while, he tried to shift position, but the knife point stopped him. "Stay still," hissed his captor. He recognized that voice. It was Wren. "Wren?" "You stink," she whispered. He tried to turn his head, but again the knife stopped him. "It's to keep the dogs away," he whispered back. "They'd never come down here anyway. They're not allowed." Torak thought for a moment. "How did you know I'd be coming this way? And why I didn't? Now be quiet. They might come back." After a cold, cramped wait that seemed to last forever, Wren gave him a kick and told him to move. He thought about trying to overpower her, but decided against it. If there was a struggle, they would disturb the bones. Instead, he heaved aside the slate slab which blocked the entrance and crawled into the daylight. The mounds were deserted. Even the ravens had gone. Wren came after him, backing out on hands and knees, and dragging 2 hazelwood packs, one of them his own. Perplexed, he crouched in the willow herb and watched her go back inside, emerging with 2 rolled-up sleeping sacks, 2 quivers and bows, both wrapped in salmon skin against the damp, and a buckskin bag that was wriggling furiously. "Wolf!" cried Torak. "Quiet!" Wren darted a wary glance in the direction of the camp. Torak wrenched open the bag and Wolf shot out, sweaty and bedraggled. He took 1 sniff and would have fled if Torak hadn't grabbed him and assured him in low half-barks that it really was him and not some murderous wolverine. Wolf broke into a big wolf smile, wagging his hindquarters and nibble-greeting Torak rapturously under the chin. "Hurry up," said Wren behind him. "Coming," snapped Torak. Grabbing handfuls of dew-soaked moss, he wiped off the worst of the dung, then yanked on his boots. Wren had had the foresight to bring them, too. As he turned to reach for his pack, he saw, to his astonishment, that she had fitted an arrow to her bow and was training it on him. She'd also slung his own bone quiver over her shoulder and stuck his axe and knife in her belt. "What are you doing?" he said. "I thought you were helping me." She looked at him in disgust. "Why would I help you? The only thing I'm helping is my clan." "Then why didn't you give me away just now?" "Because I intend to make sure that you get to the Mountain of the World Spirit. If I didn't make you, you wouldn't even try. You'd just turn tail and run, because you're a coward." Torak gasped. "A coward?" "A coward, a liar, and a thief. You stole our roebuck, you tricked Horde into losing the fight, and you lied about not being the listener. Then you ran away. Now, for the last time, move!" With Ren's arrow at his back and her accusation burning in his ears, Torak headed west downriver, keeping to the willows for cover and carrying Wolf in his arms to prevent his pads leaving a scent trail for the dogs. Amazingly, there were no sounds of pursuit. Torak found that even more disturbing than the birch bark horns. Ren set a fast pace and he stumbled often. He was tired and hungry while she was rested and fed. That would make getting away from her more difficult. But she was smaller than him, and he thought he could probably overpower her before she did too much damage with that bow. The question was, when? For the moment she seemed genuinely keen to evade the ravens, guiding him along little twisting deer paths that clung to the best cover. He decided to wait till they were further from the camp, but her insult rankled. "I'm not a coward," he said over his shoulder as they followed the river into a shady oak wood, and the threat of pursuit seemed to lessen. "Then why did you run away from our camp? They were going to sacrifice me." "They hadn't decided that yet. That's why they were arguing." "So, what should I have done? Waited to find out?" "The prophecy," Ren said coldly, "could mean two different things. If you hadn't run away, you would have learnt that." "And I suppose you're going to tell me," said Torak, "because you know everything." She heaved a sigh. "The prophecy could mean that we sacrifice you and give your blood to the mountain, and by doing so, destroy the bear. That's what Hord thinks it means. He wants to kill you, so that he can take your blood to the mountain." She paused. "Seon thinks it means something else, that only you can find the mountain and destroy the bear." Torak turned and stared at her. "Me, destroy the bear?" She looked him up and down. "I know it doesn't seem possible, but Saiyan's sure of it. So am I. The listener must find the mountain of the world spirit, and then, with the spirit's help, he must destroy the bear." Torak blinked. It couldn't be. They'd got it wrong. "Why must you go on denying it?" Ren said angrily. "You are the listener. You know you are. You fought with air, just as the prophecy says. You spoke with silence, that whistle. And the very first words of the prophecy say that the listener can talk to the other hunters in the forest. And you can talk to them because your father put you in a wolf den when you were small." Torak narrowed his eyes. "How do you know about that?" "Because I listened," she said. They followed the river west. As he walked, Torak heard the soft piping of bullfinches eating the brambles, a nuthatch tapping a branch for grubs. With all these birds around, the bear couldn't be anywhere close. Suddenly, Wolf pricked his ears and twitched his whiskers. "Down!" hissed Torak, pulling Ren with him. Moments later, two dugout canoes slid past. Torak had a good view of the one closest to him. The man who paddled it had short brown hair cut in a fringe on the brow. He wore a stiff hide mantle across his broad shoulders and a boar's tusk on a thong at his breast. A black slate throwing axe lay on his knees. Like his companion in the other canoe, he was scanning the banks as he sliced the water with powerful strokes. It was only too clear what he was seeking. "Boar clan," whispered Ren in Torak's ear. "Finn Kedin must have got them to help search for us." Torak was instantly suspicious. "How did they know we'd come this way? Did you leave them some kind of trail?" She rolled her eyes. "Why would I do that? For all I know, you're leading me to some other clan to be sacrificed." "Or maybe," she said wearily, "those Boer clan were passing this way because their autumn camp is downstream, and..." She stopped. "How did you know they were coming?" "I didn't. Wolf told me." She looked startled, then alarmed. "You really can talk to him, can't you?" He did not reply. She stood up, struggling to overcome her unease. "They've gone. It's time we headed north." She replaced her arrow in her quiver and slung her bow over her shoulder, and for a moment Torak thought she was having a change of heart. Then she drew her knife and jabbed at him to get moving. They reached a streamlet that tumbled out of a rocky gorge and started to climb. Torak began to feel dizzy with tiredness. He hadn't slept the night before and hadn't eaten for over a day. At last, he couldn't go another step and sank to his knees. Wolf jumped out of his arms, falling over his paws in his eagerness to reach the water. "What are you doing?" cried Ren. "We can't stop here." "We just did," snarled Torak. He grabbed a handful of soapwort leaves, mashed them in water, and washed off the last of the wolverine dung. Then he bent and drank his fill. Feeling a lot better, he rummaged in his pack for one of the rolls of dried roebuck that he'd prepared, what seemed like moons ago. After biting off a piece and tossing it to Wolf, he began to eat. It tasted wonderful. Already he could feel the deer's strength coursing through him. Wren hesitated, then unslung her pack and knelt, but still with her knife trained on Torak. Plunging one hand into her pack, she brought out three thin, reddish-brown cakes. She held one out to him. He took it and bit off a small fragment. It tasted rich and salty with an aromatic tang. "Dried salmon," said Wren with her mouth full. "We pound it with deer fat and juniper berries. It stays good all winter." To his surprise, she held out a salmon cake to Wolf. He pointedly ignored it. Wren hesitated, then gave the cake to Torak. He rubbed it between his palms to mask her scent with his, then offered it to Wolf, who gulped it down. Wren tried not to show her hurt. "So," she said with a shrug, "I know he doesn't like me." "That's because you keep shoving him in bags," said Torak. "Only for his own good." "He doesn't know that." "Can't you tell him?" "There's no way of saying it in wolf talk." He took another bite of salmon cake. Then he asked something that had been bothering him. "Why did you bring him?" "What?" "Wolf. You got him out of the camp. It can't have been easy." "Why?" She paused. "You seem to need him." "I don't know why, but I thought it might be important." He was tempted to tell her that Wolf was his guide, but checked himself. He didn't trust her. She'd been useful for helping him evade the ravens, but that didn't change the fact that she'd taken his weapons and called him a coward. And she still had her knife pointed straight at him. The gorge got steeper. Torak judged it safe to let Wolf walk, and the cub plodded before him with drooping tail. Wolf didn't like the climb any more than Torak. Around mid-afternoon they reached a ridge overlooking a broad wooded valley. Through the trees, Torak caught the faraway glitter of a river. "That's the Wide Water," said Wren. "It's the biggest river in this part of the forest. It flows down from the ice rivers in the high mountains and makes Lake Axehead, then goes over the Thunder Falls and onto the sea. We camp down there in early summer for the salmon. Sometimes, if the wind's in the east, you can hear the falls." Her voice trailed off. Torak guessed that she was wondering how her clan would punish her for helping their captive escape. If she hadn't called him a coward, he might have felt sorry for her. "We'll cut across the valley," she said more briskly. "It should be easy to ford the river where those meadows are. Then we can head north." "No," said Torak suddenly. He pointed at Wolf. The cub had found an elk trail that wound into a wood of tall spruce, dripping with beard moss. He was waiting for them to follow. "That way," said Torak, "up the valley, not across it."
"But that's east. If we head east, we'll reach the high mountains too soon. That'll make going north much harder."
"Which way will Finkeddin go?" said Torak.
"West for a while, along the trails, then north."
"Well, then, heading east sounds like a good idea." She frowned. "Is this some kind of trick?"
"Look," he said, "we're heading east because Wolf says we should. He knows the way."
"What? What do you mean?"
"I mean," he said quietly, "that he knows the way to the mountain." She stared at him. Then she snorted.
"That little cub?"
Torak nodded.
"I don't believe you."
"I don't care," said Torak.
Wolf hated the female tailless. He'd hated her from the first moment he'd smelt her, as she pointed the long claw that flies at his pack brother. What a thing to do! As if tall tailless was some kind of prey. After that, the female tailless had done terrible things. She'd wrenched Wolf away from tall tailless and pushed him into a strange airless den where he was bumped around so much that he'd been sick. Even worse was the way she behaved towards tall tailless. Didn't she know that he was the lead wolf? She was so sharp and disrespectful when she yipped at him in tailless talk. Why didn't tall tailless just snarl and chase her away? Now, as Wolf trotted along the trail, he was relieved to hear that she was several strides behind. Good. She should stay away. He paused to munch some lingonberries at the side of the trail, spat out a bad one, and moved on.
feeling the dry earth beneath his pads and the warmth of the hot, bright eye on his back. He raised his muscle to catch the scents wafting from the valley, some jays and a few stale elk droppings, several storm-broken spruce, lots of willow herb and withered blueberries. All were good, interesting smells, but beneath them was the cold, terrifying scent of the fast wet. Fear snapped at Wolf afresh. Somehow he and Tall Tailors had to get across the fast wet. The crossing place was still many lopes ahead, but already Wolf could hear it roaring. It was so loud that soon even his poor half-deaf pack brother would hear it. There was danger ahead, and Wolf longed to turn back, but he knew that he couldn't. The pull was getting stronger, the pull that was like the den pull, but not. Suddenly, Wolf caught another scent. He flared his nostrils to take it in. His ears went back. This was bad. 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 Wolf spun round and raced back towards Tall Tailless. Chapter 14.
"What is it?"
whispered Ren, staring at the terrified cub. "I don't know," murmured Torak. His skin began to prickle. He couldn't hear any birds. Ren took his knife from her belt and tossed it over to him. He caught it with a nod.
"We should turn back," she said. "We can't. This is the way to the mountain."
Wolf's amber eyes were dark with fear. He padded slowly forwards, head down, hackles raised. Torak and Ren followed as quietly as they could. Junipers snagged their boots. Beard moss trailed thin fingers against their faces. The trees were utterly still, waiting to see what would happen.
"Maybe it isn't," said Ren. "I mean, it could be a lynx or a wolverine."
Torak didn't believe that any more than she did. They rounded a bend and came to a fallen birch that was bleeding from deep claw marks gouged in its bark. Neither spoke. Both knew that bears sometimes claw at trees to mark their range or frighten off other hunters. Wolf approached the birch for a better sniff. Torak followed, then gave a sigh of relief.
"Badger." "Are you sure?" said Ren.
"The scratches are smaller than a bear's, and there's mud on the bark." He circled the tree. "It got its front claws clogged with earth, digging for worms. Stopped here to scrape them clean. Went back to its set. That way," he waved a hand east.
"How do you know all that?" said Ren. "Did Wolf tell you?"
"No." "The forest did." He caught her puzzled glance. "A while back I saw a robin with some badger hairs in its beak. It came from the east." He shrugged.
"You're good at tracking, aren't you?"
"Far was better."
"Well, you're better than me," said Ren. She didn't sound envious. She was merely acknowledging a fact. "But why would a badger have frightened Wolf?"
"I don't think it did," said Torak. "I think it was something else." She took his axe, bow and quiver, and held them out. "Here, you'd better take these." They crept up the trail. Wolf went first, Torak next, scanning for signs, and Ren last, straining to see through the trees. They'd gone another 50 paces when Torak stopped so abruptly that she walked into him. The young beech tree was still moaning, but it hadn't long to live. The bear had reared on its hind legs to vent its fury, snapping off the entire top of the tree, ripping away the bark in long, bleeding tatters, and slashing deep gouges high on the trunk, terrifyingly high. If Ren had stood on Torak's shoulders, she wouldn't have been able to reach the lowest claw mark.
"No bear could be that enormous," she whispered.
Torak did not reply. He was back in the blue autumn dusk, helping Far to pitch camp. Torak had made a joke, and Far was laughing. Then the forest exploded. Ravens screamed, pines cracked, and out of the dark beneath the trees surged a deeper darkness.
"It's old," said Ren.
"What?" said Torak. She gestured at the trunk. "The tree blood has hardened. Look! It's almost black." He studied the tree. She was right. The bear had clawed the bark at least 2 days before. But he couldn't share Wren's relief. She didn't know the worst of it. "With each kill," Far had said, "its power will grow. When the red eye is highest,
The bear will be invincible. Here was the proof. On the night when the bear had attacked, it had been huge, but not this huge. "It's getting bigger," he said.
"What?" said Wren.
Torek told her what Far had said. "But that's not even a moon away." "I know." A few paces off the trail, he found three long black hairs snagged on a twig at about head height. He stepped back sharply. "It went that way." He pointed down into the valley. "See how the branches have sprung back in a slightly different pattern?" But that didn't reassure him. The bear could have returned by another trail. Then, from deep in the undergrowth, came the sharp tack-tack of a wren. Torak breathed out. "I don't think it's anywhere close. Otherwise that wren wouldn't be calling." As night fell, they made a shelter of bent hazel saplings and leaf mould by a muddy stream. Holly trees gave a pretense of cover, and they lit a small fire and ate a few slips of dried meat. They didn't dare risk the salmon cakes. The bear would have smelt them from many day walks away. It was a cold night, and Torak sat hunched in his sleeping sack, listening to the faint, faraway roar that Wren said was the thunder falls. Why had Far never told him about the prophecy? Why was he the listener? What did it mean? Beside him, Wolf slept with ears twitching. Wren sat watching a beetle clamber down from the firewood. Torak now knew that he could trust her. She'd risked a lot to help him, and he couldn't have escaped without her. It was a new feeling, having someone on his side. He said, "I need to tell you something." Wren reached for a twig and helped the beetle off a branch. "Before he died," said Torak, "my father made me swear an oath to find the mountain or die trying." He paused. "I don't know why he made me swear, but I did, and I'll do my best." She nodded, and he saw that for the first time she truly believed him. "There's something I've got to tell you, too," she said. "It's about the prophecy." Frowning, she turned the twig in her fingers. If you find the mountain, you can't just ask the spirit for help. You've got to prove that you're worthy. Sayan told me last night. She said that when the crippled wanderer made the bear, he broke the pact because he made a creature that kills without purpose. He angered the world spirit. It'll take a great deal to get it to help. Torak tried to swallow. "What will it take?" She met his eyes. "You've got to bring it the three strongest pieces of the Nanwak." Torak looked at her blankly. "Sayon says that the Nanwak is like a great river that never ends. Every living thing has a part of it inside them. Hunters, prey, rocks, trees. Sometimes a special part of it forms like foam on the river. When it does, it's incredibly powerful." She hesitated. "That's what you've got to find. If you don't, the world spirit won't help you, and then you'll never destroy the bear." Torak caught his breath. "Three pieces of the Nanwak," he said hoarsely. "What are they? How do I find them?" "Nobody knows. All we have is a riddle." She shut her eyes and recited. "Deepest of all, the drowned sight. Oldest of all, the stone bite. Coldest of all, the darkest light." A breeze sprang up. The holly trees gave a prickly murmur.
"What does it mean?" said Torak.
Wren opened her eyes. "Nobody knows." He bowed his head to his knees. "So I've got to find a mountain that nobody's ever seen, and work out the answer to a riddle that nobody's ever solved, and kill a bear that nobody can fight." Wren sucked in her breath. "You've got to try." Torak was silent. Then he said, "Why did Sayon tell you all this? Why you?" "I never wanted her to, she just did.
She thinks I should be a mage when I'm grown. Don't you want to be? No, but I suppose maybe there's a purpose in these things. If she hadn't told me, I wouldn't have been able to tell you. Another silence. Then Wren wriggled out of her sleeping sack. I'll take our packs outside. We don't want the food smell to draw the bear. When she'd gone, Torak curled up on his side and lost himself in the fiery heart of the embers. Around him the forest creaked in its sleep, dreaming its deep green dreams. He thought of the thousands and thousands of tree souls thronging the darkness, waiting for him and him alone to deliver them from the bear. He thought of the golden birch and the scarlet rowan and the brilliant green oaks. He thought of the teeming prey, of the lakes and rivers full of fish, of all the different kinds of wood and bark and stone that were there for the taking if you knew where to look. The forest had everything you could ever want. Until now, he'd never realized how much he loved it. If the bear could not be destroyed, all this would be lost. Wolf leapt up and went off on one of his nightly hunts. Wren returned, got into her sleeping sack without a word, and fell asleep. Torak went on staring into the fire. There's a purpose in these things, Wren had said. In a strange way, that gave him strength. He was the listener. He had sworn to find the mountain. The forest needed him. He would do his best. He slept fitfully. He dreamed that Far was alive again, but instead of a face he had a blank white stone. I am not Far. I am the wolf mage. Torak woke with a start. He felt Wolf's breath on his face, then the downy brush of the cub's whiskers on his eyelids, and the needle-fine grooming nibbles on his cheeks and throat. He licked the cub's muzzle, and Wolf nuzzled his chin, then settled against him with a oomph. We should have crossed lower down, said Wren as they craned their necks at the thunder falls. Torak wiped the spray from his face and wondered how anything in the forest could be this angry. All day they'd been following the calm green widewater upstream, but now, as it thundered over a sheer wall of rock, it was appalling in its fury. Before it the whole forest seemed to stand and stare. We should have crossed lower down, Wren said again. We would have been seen, said Torak. Those meadows were too exposed. Besides, Wolf wanted to stay on this side. Wren pursed her lips. If he's the guide, then where is he? He hates fast water. His pack was drowned in a flood, but he'll be back when we've found a way to get above the falls. Said Wren, unconvinced. Like Torak, she'd slept badly and she'd been moody all morning. Neither of them had mentioned the riddle. Eventually they found a deer track that wound up the side of the falls. It was steep and muddy, and by the time they reached the top they were exhausted and soaked in spray. Wolf was waiting for them, sitting beneath a birch tree a safe distance from the wide water, shaking with fear. "Where to now?" panted Wren. Torak was watching Wolf. "We follow the river till he tells us to cross." "Can you swim?" asked Wren. He nodded. "Can you?" "Yes." "Can Wolf?" "I don't think so." They started upstream, pushing through brambles and tangled rowan and birch. It was a cold, overcast day, and the wind scattered birch leaves onto the river like small amber arrowheads. Wolf trotted with his ears flat back. The river ran fast and smooth on its way to the falls. They hadn't gone far when Wolf began to run up and down the bank, mewing. Torak could feel his fear. He turned to Wren. He wants to cross, but he's frightened. The brambles are too thick here, said Wren. What about further up, by those rocks? The rocks were smooth and splashed with treacherous-looking moss, but they reared a good half-forearm out of the water. They might provide a way across. Torak nodded. I'll go first, said Wren, pulling off her boots and tying them to her pack, then rolling up her leggings. She found a stick for balance and slung her pack over one shoulder so that it wouldn't drag her down if she fell in. Her quiver and bow she carried in the other hand, high above her head. She looked scared as she approached the water, but she made it across without faltering. until the final rock, when she had to leap for the bank and ended up grabbing a willow branch to haul herself up. Torak left his pack and weapons on the bank and pulled off his boots. He would carry Wolf across, then return for his things. "Come on, Wolf," he said encouragingly. Then he said it in wolf talk, hunkering down on his haunches and making low, reassuring mewing noises. Wolf shot under a juniper bush and refused to come out. "Put him in your pack," shouted Wren from the other side. "It's the only way you'll get him across." "If I did that," yelled Torak, "he'd never trust me again." He sat down in the moss on the edge of the bank. Then he yawned and stretched to show Wolf how relaxed he was. After a while, Wolf emerged from the juniper and came to sit beside him. Again, Torak yawned. Wolf glanced at him, then gave a huge yawn that ended in a whine. Slowly, Torak got to his feet and picked Wolf up in his arms, murmuring softly in wolf talk. The rocks felt ice-cold and slippery under Torak's bare feet. In his arms, Wolf started shivering with terror. On the far bank, Wren held onto a birch sapling with one hand and leaned towards them. "That's it!" she shouted above the thunder of the falls. "You're nearly there!" Wolf's claws dug into Torak's jerkin. "Last rock!" shouted Wren. "I'll grab him!" A wave slapped into the rock, splashing them with freezing water. Wolf's courage broke. Twisting frantically out of Torak's grip, he leapt for the bank, landing with his hind legs in the water and his forepaws clawing at the bank. Wren leaned down and caught him by the scruff. "I've got him!" she yelled. Torak overbalanced and crashed into the river.
The first three books in the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series by Michelle Paver are available to download at audible.co.uk for the special multi-buy price of $14.99 until the end of August. If you enjoyed Wolf Brother, you'll want to join The Clan, the official worldwide fan site for all readers of the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series. The Clan is where thousands of fans just like you meet for games and chat, role-playing, art competitions, writing contests and quizzes. Best of all, it's free. So go to www.torak.info. That's TORAK.INFO, and join the clan now.
Guardian Unlimited.